Well, here we are again, another Monday afternoon, and you have tuned yourself to Chatterbox, the hour-long Monday afternoon call-in talk program. I'm Eric Corley, and I'll be here for another hour, talking about all kinds of things and getting phone calls from you. Our number is 246-7901, area code 516. And on this rather cloudy Monday afternoon, what better thing to do than to sit by the radio and talk to it? Yes, that's what we're asking you to do. Talk to your radio. And today we have a very interesting guest with us, Assistant Professor Ernest Dubay of the Africana Studies Department. Now, if you've been reading newspapers and watching TV, maybe even listening to the radio, you may realize that Professor Dubay has been the focal point of a controversy because of his teachings regarding racism and Zionism and all that kind of thing. Let's get right to the issue. First of all, Professor Dubay, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming by today.
Thank you.
What exactly was it that you said this summer in one of your courses that started this whole thing off?
Nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
There was something in the syllabus.
It was something that was in the syllabus. And the syllabus, like a title of a book, merely says what is going to be discussed, not how it is going to be discussed. And some visiting professor from Israel decided that he was going to take this thing out of their context and pretended as though what he was discussing was my course, when in actual fact he was discussing my course out of context.
What was the name of the book that you assigned?
It wasn't really a book that he was particularly interested in. He was particularly interested in the topics that were assigned for the class, topics that were going to be discussed in the class.
Mm-hmm. So, and what were those topics?
Well, there were many of them. But the particular one that he was interested in was the 4 weeks that we're going to be discussing the various forms of racism. Mm-hmm. And amongst the topic that was going to be discussed was Nazism in Germany, apartheid in South Africa, and Zionism in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Do you equate the three?
No, no. What we do, however, is to look at each of the topics and see what are the things that make people to say this particular thing is racism, and then look at whether there is any kind of supportive evidence. Mm-hmm. And if we don't find supportive evidence, then of course we do not say that this thing is racism, even though generally it might be discussed as being racism.
What conclusion did you reach about Zionism?
Well, what conclusion I reached with Zionism is that Zionism is not monolithic, and that is often the mistake that people who accuse Zionists as being racist tend to do, whereas Zionism, in actual fact, historically and even today, has never been monolithic. So if you want to find any group as being racist, first of all, you have to take into consideration the fact that they're different organizations and look at each one of them individually rather than try to look at them globally, because if you do that, then you're never going to find out whether there is the truth or a lie in any of the statements that are made by those who globalizes.
Mm-hmm. What's the actual name of this course?
The name of the course is AFS Paul 319, The Politics of Race.
I see. Now, are you teaching this course this semester too?
Yes, yes.
Has anything been changed in it?
Not in the teaching. What I've been asked to do is to spell out exactly what is taught, because the bulletin in the past was kind of misleading, in the sense that it did not include all the topics that are discussed, but only those that the fashioners of the syllabus had decided to be the only one that are going to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was to expand those, because racism is not just a phenomenon of the United States, it's a worldwide problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, this past summer, this was not the first time you taught this course.
No.
You taught it before without any variation in the syllabus. So the reason then for all this controversy would appear to be because one person found it and decided to make an issue out of it.
Exactly. Because I had been teaching this course for the last 3 years. Now I think it's over 5 or 6 semesters that this course has been given.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time that there was any problem, even though the course was discussed in the same kind of way and the syllabus was worded in the same kind of way.
Could you describe how many classes, first of all, devoted to the issue of Zionism and racism?
During the summer, because the hours are longer,
mm-hmm.
We devote something of about an hour or two, but not more than that. The whole issue is that the course is not really a course about Zionism, it's a course about racism. And this is merely a segment, a small segment of the entire course.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's say we're at the course of the part of the course where you speak about Zionism and its racial implications. What are some of the things that you bring up, and what are some of the arguments that you hear, and how do the students accept it?
Well, first of all, we try to look at Zionism as a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And to see whether Zionism as a movement was consisting only of one single group with the same kind of mind. And what we find is that, in fact, Zionism is a kind of a federation of different organizations. And the only things that these organizations tend to agree upon are only two. One, a state which will be a Jewish state. Two, that in that Jewish state, Jews must be in the majority. But after that, they are as different as any other different groups you can find.
Uh-huh.
So to begin to talk about them as though every group represents something that all Zionists do share is, in fact, to mislead people.
Mm-hmm. So Zionism is not just one movement. It's a lot of different viewpoints.
Yes, yes.
I see.
As I say, in fact, it's not what you might say a union, but it's more of a federation.
Right.
Yes.
So what kind of facts do you bring up in the class? I mean, do you equate it with racism?
Some of the groups, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, some of the organizations.
Okay, could you tell me what those organizations are?
For instance, the Herut Party.
Uh-huh.
Is what we see as being representative of what you can call racism.
What do they stand for?
They stand for something that is not different from other races stand for. They make a distinction between people on the basis of the so-called Jews and Arabs. And the people that are Arab face the same kind of problems that people face under racism.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the history of this party, while it was still called the Egun, they committed a number of atrocities against people for no other reason than that they were Arabs, and they wanted to expel them. And the way of expelling them was by killing some of them and to create a scare.
When was this?
This would go back to prior to the formation of the Israeli state, 1947-48.
Now, what kind of power does this party have today? Where are they?
Well,
from?
It is the government now.
That's the actual government.
It is the actual government now.
Okay.
And something which I find very interesting is that while it was still thought of as impossible to have this party being a government, whenever you talked about this party, everyone was prepared to say, oh, Bergen and his group, those are terrorists, but today it is becoming a sin to even point that out. Uh-huh. Something that used to be acceptable generally.
Yeah, it's Begin is a freedom fighter. And
well, at that time, they didn't look at him as a freedom fighter. They looked at him as a terrorist.
Who's they? You mean our government?
Most of the Jewish people I used to talk about, whenever you ask about the question of the treatment of the Arabs by Israeli, and immediately you came up with Begin's party, you say, oh no, you can't really talk about that one. That one is a non-terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
But today you can no longer even point at that, even though there is evidence to the fact that he's...
Have they changed, perhaps, by becoming so powerful? Have they maybe mellowed a little bit? Would you still call them a terrorist group?
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't call them a terrorist group, but I would, unless if one can include a state as being a terrorist, but their actions have definitely been terrorism against the Arabs, particularly those that are of the Palestinian organization, the PLO.
To the present day.
Oh, to the present day, oh yes. If you look at the statements, for instance, which used to come from, even at that time, the defense minister, when he said the PLO has got to be destroyed.
Ariel Sharon?
Yes. Okay. And not only him, a number of the generals who are great supporters of Menachem Begin were going along the same kind of way. They need to be exterminated. That is what the line was.
Okay, we'll get back to this point in a minute. I'd just like to go over the other groups and organizations that we started to mention. We mentioned one, which is Begin's party.
Yes.
What else do we have?
Well, we have the Mapai, which although it is in full agreement with the Begin party, but its methods are far more civilized, but the aim is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the MAPAM, which is on the other extreme. It is not dealing with the Arabs as though they were a different kind of a group of people. They see them as human beings who need to be treated like human beings. So if you are to look at the situation, you can't say that the MAPAM, mm-hmm, is exactly the same thing as the Likud.
But still they stand up for the principles of Zionism.
They stand up for the principle of Zionism. But it seems to me that you can't say that people, because they began from a particular standpoint, that along the line they cannot change. When they do change, you've got to point out the change that has been made. You can't then blame them for what in the past was the history, instead of judging them by what they're doing at the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other factions within
Zionism? Well, there are many. There are many factions within Zionism. In fact, I think even in Israel today, you have something like 11 different groupings.
Mm-hmm.
And these different groupings would not have been there if at all they did not have differences with the others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Zionism seems to be, like you said before, coming from many different directions with a common purpose, but with different views within it. And this last group you mentioned, MAFEM, is that
MAPAM?
MAPAM.
Mm-hmm.
How powerful are they? Do they have any?
Well, I don't really know how powerful they are. All I do know is that they are not in the government, but mm-hmm, they have a number of people who have been elected. They are in the Knesset.
Mm-hmm. Are they making a difference? Are they saying things? Are they changing policies?
Well, so far they have not been able to change any kind of meaningful policies, but they have been the main group that was or has been, and I think will continue to be, I hope, to oppose the land grabbing that seemed to be coming from Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me just remind our listeners that we're speaking with Professor Ernest Dubé here at the State University at Stony Brook, and Professor Dubé has been the center of controversy because of his teachings, which some people say that Zionism is racism, and You don't... Do you actually say that, or do you define...
No, I say, for instance, that those people who are saying that are as mistaken as those people who want, on the other side, mm-hmm. to say Zionism cannot be racist, or who defend even the most blatant oppression that has come from some of the Zionists. Because to me, they represent two sides of the same coin with the others. The others say everything that is Zionism is racism, and the other group says Zionism and racism are two are things that you cannot find. And yet, in actual fact, both of them are making the mistake of globalizing or treating Zionism as though it was ever monolithic when it was never monolithic.
Let me just say at this point, our phone number is 246-7901. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to make at this point, from that statement you just made, I would say that you're saying it's possible that any type of movement, any type of government can be racism.
Any type of people or ethnic group.
Okay.
And to pretend that there is a special group that cannot be racist.
That's the real danger.
It's a real danger. That's right.
I see. We have a call. Let's go to it. USB, you're on the air. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, to commenting on what Professor Dubay had said, I have a friend of mine who recently came from Israel, and it was just kind of an interesting thing. He just made a strange comment to me. I was asking him about all the different political things that would be going on and the conflicts and the relationships that are going on with the Arabs and how that's going on. And he just said to me, well, I'm not really into that Zionist head trip type thing. And I just kind of thought it was very interesting. He says, well, I'm a Jew first and foremostly, but I'm not a Zionist. And I asked him what he meant by that, and he said, well, it's a long story, and I'd rather not get involved, but it's just kind of interesting that here's someone who is from Israel and who does believe in Israel, but he kind of senses that there is something there, whatever it is, that is termed Zionism, whatever that might be. And I don't know. I just thought maybe that was just a comment. I figure I'd call in and mention because I heard this program, and it just kind of struck me as being kind of interesting.
Oh, thanks for sharing it with us.
Okay, thank you.
Any comment on that?
Yes, and of course this is one of the other things that the defenders of Israel sometimes do not ever mention, that there are quite a number of Jewish people who are in Israel who are anti-Zionism. It seems to me it is their right, if there are things that they see in the movement which they do not want to associate with, it is their right. But the most important thing is that sometimes we think of Jews, particularly those in Israel, as though all of them are supportive of Zionism, when in fact they are not. And hence many of them are called self-hating Jews, because they become critical of the things that they see.
They don't have the my country right or wrong mentality.
That's right.
I see. Do you see that in larger numbers among Jews than among another ethnic group?
No. It only shows one thing, that you cannot really, unless you're a racist, generalize over a people, because people come there as individuals and each one with his own mind. So if you want to attack any group for whatever reason, it is best to always remember they are not monolithic. They are not of the same mind.
Even though some people would like to say that.
That's right.
Let's, first of all, let me remind our listeners, our telephone number is 246-7901, area code 516. You're welcome to call in with your questions and comments for Professor Ernest Dubay. Regarding the Palestinian issue, you mentioned before that the current-day government in Israel is rather non-humanitarian towards these people. Would you care to go into that just a little bit more?
Well, I guess the serious problem is not really with the Herut as a party, because they are having their stand quite clear. Their stand has been clear for many years. The only people that I have a problem with are those that pretend that these things are non-existent. And people who therefore pretend that if you are critical of any grouping amongst the Zionists, therefore you are critical of everybody. Whereas in actual fact, this need not be so. You are merely critical of those particular groups because they do certain things which you think they are wrong.
In wartime, though, being critical suddenly becomes a lot less fashionable. For instance, if you were critical of the United States in the middle of World War II, I don't think you'd have very many people giving you an open microphone.
That's true. But nonetheless, even during the World War II, there were pacifists who were quite critical of the United States involvement. And they were not silenced because they were critical. Mm-hmm. They could be wrong. But nonetheless, the channels of these people were just critical and not being labeled, as the tendency tends to be in the case once it comes to Israel. If you're critical, then you're anti-Semitic.
There are, I've seen critics in Israel. Are they, ipso facto, labeled?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They what does that label mean? Does it?
Well, the label is to put them in a situation wherein they are either regarded as cranks or communists, mm-hmm. even though some of them are not communists.
Mm-hmm.
So labeling, therefore, is a way of silencing you.
Is it, though?
Oh, yes.
Because in this country, it's quite common for people, anti-nuclear demonstrators, to be labeled communists.
Isn't that also an attempt of trying to...
It's an attempt, but
that's right.
Does it succeed?
Well, in some cases, you see, when you're dealing with individuals, there are those individuals, for instance, who a kind of a threat like that or label like that would then make them to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say every one of them would be cowed down, but there would be those who would be cowed down.
That's true. The less courageous, perhaps.
That's right.
Have you ever been to Israel yourself?
No, but I've had very close friends who have been there.
Uh-huh. I see. Now, let's bring it back home to Stony Brook, where this whole controversy is taking place. Now, first of all, do you think the questions being raised at this point by students, professors, administration, do you think it's fair to be bringing this up now?
Well, the students are bringing the situation which has already been brought up by people who deliberately and knowingly were accusing me of things that they knew I wasn't doing. And what disturbed me is that whereas when things like that are done by ordinary men in the street, it's easier to understand. When it is done by university people, professors, then it's difficult to understand, because these are people who are expected to be in search of the truth. In my case, they didn't even do that. They decided that the way in which Professor Trun represented me was the correct one, and they proceeded along those lines when I was here and they had an opportunity really to find out what was being taught in my class.
Who is they?
Well, there have been a number of people who have been writing letters to the newspapers pretending that they are discussing my course when they're discussing something out of context.
Mm. And what do these people say?
Some of the things that they have raised were so illogical that you can't even expect professors to be doing things like that.
Such as?
Such as, for instance, if you equate Zionism with racism, it means you are anti the state of Israel, or you are saying that the state of Israel is an immoral state and its founding was immoral.
Mm-hmm.
How does that come in? The state of Israel is a reality. Now, does it mean that it is above criticism?
Mm-hmm.
And if you criticize it, therefore you are threatening it? Or which is the thing that people would do to any government which is doing something that they think is not correct? Try to make them correct the thing that is wrong.
Looking on this from a historian's viewpoint, how does such a movement develop such an attitude where it feels itself above criticism, and what other movements in the past have had this same kind of attitude?
Well, that would be a difficult question for me to answer. The only thing that I can say when it comes to that kind of a situation is that to me, it is not different from Nazism, because the Nazis, whoever criticized Nazism, was anti-folk,
mm-hmm.
was a traitor to the folk. And the only traitors to the folk were the communists. And of course, the people that they had decided to label as the people worth to be exterminated, the Jews. And sometimes in the literature of the Nazis, you found a difficulty separating between the Jews and communism, because sometimes they would be treated as though they are one and the same thing, and both of them were enemies of the Germans. Now, when... Nazis, and they are doing exactly the same thing with the Nazis, and yet, you should not point at the similarities?
Mm-hmm. Was there ever such a movement in the United States?
I think in the United States, like in everywhere else, there are different groups of Zionists. For instance, in this attack on me, there have been Zionists who have been defending me.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't referring to Zionists, though. I meant just a movement that takes on the same characteristics as what you brought up, the Nazi characteristic.
Oh, yes, or there are many. The fascists, for instance.
Is there a fascist group in
oh,
the United
yes.
States? They call themselves fascists?
Oh, yes. They call themselves fascists.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also a Nazi group here in the United States.
Yeah.
But there are many others who may not be necessarily formed as organizations, but who share exactly the same kind of mentality.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, we mentioned the Nazis, and we mentioned... that's all we mentioned as a major group were the Nazis.
And the fascists.
And the fascists.
Yes.
Okay.
And the Ku Klux Klan have the same mentality.
Now, what breeds this kind of attitude as far as, is it the will of the people? Is it economic conditions?
I don't think so. I don't think so. This is another problem when you come to look at the theories of racism. You find that some of the theories of racism tend to look at economics and glue on economics as being the only thing that is there. But there are also some other problems which go with this, and the belief that there is something like race, and other races are superior to others and others are inferior.
Mm-hmm.
So you find people who have no economic gain whatsoever, who still look at the skin of their color and say, because my skin is this, therefore I belong to the superior race, and other people, because they are either Jews or Africans or blacks or Negroes, they are part of the inferior group. And some of these people are in fact very poor people.
You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. The program is Chatterbox, and we're on until 3:30. You're welcome to give us a call at 246-7901, area code 516. We're speaking with Professor Ernest Dubé here at the State University at Stony Brook. Professor Dubé is in the Africana Studies Department, and we're discussing his course, which has generated a lot of controversy over the past few months. And one type of government that we didn't really draw upon were the apartheids in South Africa. Now, where do you see them fitting in all this?
Well, you have to know the history of the Afrikaners, particularly of the Nationalist Party, who during the 30s, right up to the end of the Second World War, had fashioned themselves on Nazism. The policy of apartheid was nothing but a transplant of Nazism into South Africa and adapted to be used in South Africa.
How about communist governments? Do you see them in the same way?
Well, the problem with the communist governments, and the problem there is that most of the literature, if you find any, is one that is uncritical. Similarly with what you originally or ordinarily find as literature coming from the United Nations, where it is more of advocacy than an attempt at analyzing. So it's difficult to comment on the communist countries because you just don't have enough data.
Why is that? I mean, why can't we get more? Is it their fault? Is it our fault?
It's difficult there to say also. But being an American, I must say it is our fault. Because if at all we were looking at things in an objective kind of way and providing the material that we need to be an informed people, instead we are getting what is more of propaganda rather than of information that we can be able to analyze in a critical form.
Can we as people overcome that, though?
I think we can. We can. There are some people, for instance, who do go and look at a number of things there. The unfortunate thing is that sometimes when they say things that we don't want to hear, we tend to attack them. You take, for instance, this evangelist, Bill Graham, when he went to the Soviet Union and he said, "I found people going to churches," some people started attacking him left and right. So that by saying what he saw, he should not have said what he said as things that he saw. Anything that you see which is seen as an advocacy, then you are criticized for it. Whereas I don't believe that he was doing anything of that sort. He was merely telling the truth as he saw it.
Not so much advocacy, but something that could indirectly lead to advocacy.
That's right.
In the minds of the person listening. That's interesting. I'd like to once again bring this closer to home and talk some more about just what kind of problems you've been facing. Now, there's some kind of a group on campus that I read about last week, the JDO, not the JDL, the JDO, Jewish Defense Organization. What are these people? Are they a bunch of nuts or what? From what I've been hearing of them, they've been threatening you. Is that true?
That's true, but I wouldn't say they're on campus. I have no evidence that they're on campus. The leaflets that they distributed here seem to give an address which was in New York City, but they were here on campus and they were threatening.
In what way were they threatening?
Well, they said a number of things. Amongst them, you have to fire somebody who is anti-Semitic. Being anti-Semitic is equal to be anti-Jew. To be anti-Jew is equal to be an enemy of Israel, wanting the destruction of the state of Israel. And such people should not be allowed, should not be hired by the university. If the university don't fire Ernest Dube, we will teach Ernest Dube Jewish justice, something like that.
And what do you interpret that as meaning?
Well, from what I've heard of the group and what I read from the statesman, it meant that they intended physical harm.
Have you ever gotten such a threat directly in the form of a phone call or a letter?
Well, it's a form of a phone call, yes, but not face-to-face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you have been harassed by...
Oh, yeah.
Anyone identifying themselves or just anonymous
people?
No,
they don't. They don't. The only one that was identified was some young man called Mordecai Levy.
Uh-huh.
But the others who were with him, they did not identify them. And so I don't know who they are.
Okay, we'll talk more about this in a moment. Our telephone number is 246-7901. And everyone out there, of course, is welcome to call us. We do have a call, so let's go to it. USB, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling in reference to the discussion on is Zionism racism.
Okay.
To my knowledge, Zionism is a movement started before World War II that preaches a homeland for the Jewish people in the Middle East. And then the homeland for the Jewish Middle People, for the Jewish East, for the Jewish people in the Middle East, was spearheaded by a white paper for the for Palestine, which was a subject of the British colonies. Now, I'd like to know where the concept that Zionism is racism comes from, because whatever I've studied or read about Zionism didn't say to destroy other people or to discriminate.
Your question is not a very clear-cut kind of question, because I could put the question back and say that Nazism did not start by saying their aim was to destroy any people, but that didn't mean that it was not racism. Now, the Zionist movement...
Can I ask you a question about that?
Okay.
I hear what you're saying, and that may be true, but does that make Zionism guilty by complicity because it's a movement by definition, and so is Zionism a movement by definition? And since Nazism as a movement ended up that way, as racism, you're saying now Zionism as a movement is guilty also? I don't understand that.
Now, you are making the same mistake that the people who are globalizing do. You are saying Zionism is a movement. That's true, but it's a movement composed of different movements. It's not just one monolithic movement. Now, you then say that it is a nationalism. But so was Nazism, and so is apartheid. So I don't think that if you want to analyze whether Zionism is correctly called racist, you are helpful by merely saying that it is a nationalism. It is only when you can say that it is a nationalism which does this or does that, which is far away from racism. But by merely leaving it at a question of nationalism, you are not really attending to the problem. And the other thing is, if we have to look at nationalisms, there are different kinds of nationalisms. You can't say a thing is ipso facto racism simply because it is a nationalist movement. It is only when there are certain things that that movement does which can be interpreted as racism, and only then could you then say it is racism. And to blanket everyone simply because he or she identifies herself as being a Zionist, you can't say that, because there are so many different groupings in Zionism.
Okay, so if I understand what you're saying there's a group in the Zionist movement that is racist.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I am saying that.
How or why do you say that? Have you identified such a group, or have you...
I have already identified the Lehud Party and the Legun, the Irgun. That's right. When they were killing the Palestinians, Arabs, they were not killing them for any reason other than that they were Arabs.
I believe that was very close to a revolution within the Palestine state. They were killing British officers.
Oh, you are talking when they were still attacking the British officers and the British army. But I am talking of a time after that, when the other people, there was no war involved between the Jews and the Arabs, and the Igun were killing the Arabs in order to expel them from the land that ultimately became Israel.
Okay, I would consider that a civil war.
A civil war when there is fighting between the two groups, but there was no fighting at the time that I'm talking about. It was a question of opening the land.
It's a question of what?
Of expropriating the Arab land.
If that's the case, and you know the Israelis or the Zionists, the racist Zionists, wanted to get rid of the Arab people from Arab land, why is it that today the population within the state of Israel is still between 40% and 50% Arab?
What happened before then? What were the population numbers?
I don't know about, you know, I can't plot a curve of, you know, the population.
Yeah, the population difference.
Yes, I'm talking about today.
We are talking about not only today, but there is also a history which you cannot pretend did not take place. So that when you are looking at it, you first of all look at the history and look at what is happening today and say, what was happening, is there still a continuity? And you would say that if you are being honest with yourself, there is still a continuity insofar as the Harut.
Okay, the continuity you speak of today is the continued destruction of the Palestine people.
That's right.
Okay, and I see that as not as racism, but as military activity against a group within the Middle East that has vowed to destroy a state.
You see, there are so many things that can be used as excuses for doing a thing that is evil. For instance, the Afrikaners, when they are doing what they are doing to the Africans, they are saying they are protecting themselves.
I think this would be a good point for an analogy in the Holocaust, why the Jews were supposed to be destroyed. What was one of the reasons that was used there?
That's right.
I believe they were a threat of some sort.
Uh-huh.
Well, they were said to be a threat, but from whatever I've been able to read, I don't think there was any Jewish activity in Europe that said that they were going to destroy Germany, that they were going to destroy any group within Europe. The Jews in Europe didn't have any military force. They didn't have any weapons. There was some writings about them having economic strength, which later turned out to be ridiculous, because if they had economic strength, I don't think what happened to them would have happened to them. Okay, but getting back to the focus, we're making an analogy between destruction of the Jews in Europe by Germany and the destruction of the Palestinians in Middle East by the Israelis. And the Jews in Europe, before the Holocaust began, I don't think there's any documentation showing that they made threats, subtle or otherwise, to overthrow or destroy another state within the area. The Palestinians have vowed to destroy a state, and what's happening to them is a military action as a result of their position. And I don't see that it's possible or plausible to make an analogy between those two periods.
I think this is where you're making a big mistake. The problem is not whether the threat was real or unreal. Those who were saying they are being threatened by the Jews, in all probability they believed it. In all probability they did put themselves in a situation wherein they would believe anything which was in line with what they wanted to do. But there is an analogy there, and that analogy is that the people who say they were threatened then began to do something about those people whom they said were a threat to them. I would definitely agree with you that there was no threat that was coming to the Jews, but I'm not a German and I wasn't a Nazi. You see? Now, coming on to the other side, There are certain things that, for instance, I can see with the in common between the Palestinians and myself. I was born in South Africa. I have no land now. And the people, my people in South Africa, who are the indigenous people there, are being thrown to arid pieces of land, and they are supposed to live on those arid pieces of land when the newcomers, the settlers, have all the land. Now, are you going to say that I have no reason to fight to keep my land?
You certainly do.
Okay.
As do the Palestinians have a reason to fight and demand a homeland.
So? But where is our problem then?
I mean that Zionism is racism, which is why I made this call, and I believe that's the focus of your position.
Now you are misinterpreting my position. I have not said Zionism in global terms. Now you are busy going back and misrepresenting me as though I talk in global terms when I don't.
You're saying there are aspects of Zionism that are racist.
There are groups or organizations within the Zionist movement who are.
Couldn't that be said of any group, any movement? Aren't there aspects in just about any kind of government or any kind of people's movement that are racist?
There are movements which it would be impossible for you being a racist to belong to. For instance, the African National Congress of South Africa. If you are racist, you can't belong. Period.
Mm-hmm. A racist against anybody?
Against anybody. In fact, we have, as the African National Congress, been fighting racism, which have come from all sides, including some from the Africans themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I find what you're saying interesting. It's a very difficult discussion, but if your position is that there are elements of the Zionist movement that are racist, that would be a very hard thing for me to say doesn't exist, because I don't know. With any group of people, you're going to have people that are no good.
You are right. My course, therefore, is drawing people's attention to just that problem, because racism is evil. And to pretend that our particular group is a more virtuous people, it cannot be racist, is making a big mistake, because we do find racists even amongst the oppressed people.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Our telephone number is 246-7901. We have about 10 minutes left, and we're talking with Professor Ernest Dubé here at the State University at Stony Brook, and we're talking about racism and Zionism and things like that. It was kind of interesting what you said, though, about the, was it the African Congress?
The African National Congress.
National Congress. Now, it just seems like kind of a hard statement to prove when you say that if you're a racist, you cannot belong. I mean, how is that enforced? How do you prove if someone is a racist or not?
Because people who are racist will always be making statements which are racist.
Mm-hmm.
The African National Congress, by the way, is the oldest political movement in Africa south of the Sahara, and probably the oldest in the so-called Third World. Now, we have had problems within the membership of the ANC in the past, and those that were racist were either expelled or they decided they couldn't belong.
And who were they?
Well, they went to form an organization which was called the Pan-Africanist Congress.
And what countries are members of that?
South Africans. They're all South Africans.
Just South Africans?
That's right.
Now, the African National Congress is comprised of how many different how many different countries are...
No, African National Congress is a South African political movement.
Oh, I see.
There was
oh, okay.
a time when the movement was open to many of the people from Southern Africa. For instance, uh-huh. when it was founded, it was it included people from as far afield as what is today Zimbabwe and all the then British protectorates of Botswana, Swaziland, and Lesotho.
Would you say something then to the effect that the civil rights movement in this country you could not be a part of the civil rights movement if you were a racist?
Well, the civil rights movement is a difficult kind of a movement because it was an amorphous movement. It was not a structured organization with a constitution of its own. When you are talking of the African National Congress, you're talking of a movement with a constitution.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And what is stated in that constitution? What kind of power does this group have?
It doesn't have power. If it was in power, there would be no racist government in South Africa. But there is no doubt that it has a large support in South Africa.
It's allowed to exist. How come?
No, it was banned. It is existing underground.
I see. Okay, since we only have about 7 or 8 minutes left, I'd once again like to say if anyone else out there wants to give us a call, now is the time to do it, 246-7901, area code 516. Summing up this whole experience, what have you learned from it?
Well, what I've learned from it is that people don't want to face up to the truth. And there is a tendency of believing that by labeling people, you are able to shut them up, and you are going to be able to have only your opinion represented as the only honest and truthful opinion.
The people that you've received pressure from, have they been only people that you would expect to receive that kind of pressure from, or have you received any kind of pressure from the State University or from people in your department?
To be honest on this, I didn't expect from what I was teaching in my course to have people within the university to do what they have done, deliberately taking my course out of context and discussing it out of context.
Surely you must have known that people like that are out there and that it could happen. You must have known it was a volatile issue.
No.
It could be misinterpreted.
No. If I believe that the university is not a place where you search for the truth,
mm-hmm.
maybe I would have believed that. But I have taken the university to be a place where there is a search of the truth, whatever the truth might be. And that some of the controversial subjects you can be able to discuss without being taken out of context or distorted. When I got that, to tell you the honest fact, I was shocked. I can understand that happening with people in the street, but not in the university.
What has the university itself said to you?
Nothing really that has come from the university, because the university, other than through the Senate, which looked at all this matter and absolved me from any wrongdoing, I can't say that the university has been part of this attack on my cause or myself.
I believe at one point President Marburger said that the university by no means equates itself with your views or something along those
well,
lines.
Well, I think he's correct there. The university doesn't support any of the courses that are being taught or the ways that they're being taught.
Any of the courses?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Yes.
So that was.
It doesn't have to. The university doesn't have to support any of the courses that we're doing, so long as they are approved courses.
Mm-hmm.
How you teach them, it's your own business, so long as you do not transgress or go beyond academic freedom.
Let me ask you one more thing. We have a call we're going to go to. Within the class itself, what was the reaction of students within the class? Did you receive the same kind of reaction that you're receiving from people who never took the course?
No. Not from my students.
Mm-hmm.
They were shocked, of course, with everything that I came up with. For instance, black students used to be shocked to hear that even blacks can be racist.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the kind of a thing as took this as an affront. My classes have always had about 5% Jewish students. I've never found that, even amongst them.
Let's go to these calls. USB, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to make some comments about
the discussion. It seems to me that one is missing the fact here that Zionism really is a national liberation idea, and that in the particular situation that Israel finds itself in now, that Israel is surrounded by hostile Arab neighbors, that they apparently see Israel as a threat, and that they really are against Israel being in an area that they feel should be totally occupied by Arabs. So one could say that the Arab countries, and to an extent the Palestinians themselves, are at least as guilty of being racists as the extreme groups that have been mentioned within Israel, who are being called racists.
Okay, we have about a minute to address this.
Okay, from what I hear from you, I could equate that with what is happening in Southern Africa. South Africa sees itself as being surrounded by hostile Africans. But this is not the point. The point is, what is happening within South Africa itself? It is the racism which isolates South Africa from the rest of Africa. So to say that...
I agree that what is happening in South Africa is wrong, but I hate to confuse South Africa with Israel.
No. You are confusing it.
You
are saying, in actual fact, that the Palestinians have no right to fight for a homeland. The only people who have a right to fight for a homeland are the Jews. And I don't believe that, unless you are saying there are other human beings who are human beings and others who are less human beings.
No, I agree that they have a right to fight. The question is Zionism racism? And is it worse than the situation in Arab countries where Jews certainly have been suppressed, where Jews have been kicked out of their land? There's no question about that. Is it worse than our immigration policy in the United States? Is it worse than the situation in the Soviet Union that you say you have no information about, where Jews are required to have on their identification cards that they're Jews?
Let us suppose, for
instance... Why don't you discuss this?
Let us suppose that the situation you are describing, for instance, with... the position of the Jews in the Arab lands. Must we not condemn that when it happens?
Are you in fact condemning it as vigorously?
It depends what you mean by vigorously. All I am doing is teaching about racism. Now, when you're saying that I'm condemning vigorously, you are meaning that I'm an advocate of something. When in my class, we don't do that. We don't advocate anything.
The question is, why should one take, as one of the examples of racism, why should one take Zionism and not discuss the situation where Jews were expelled from every country almost on this earth, particularly from Egypt, let's say?
We discuss as much as we have the information, and we look at the topics as they are discussed, and we try to look at... the situation and say to ourselves how much true these topics are or how false they are. And we find that, for instance, this globalization, which unfortunately you are now going back to making the same mistake of globalization, is a mistake. It's not going to solve that problem. It is only when we are looking at the situation squarely and then help both the Arabs and the Israelis to understand the situation so that they can deal with it in a human way.
Yeah, I think that's very important. Let me just say something that is more a personal feeling, which perhaps might shed some light on the situation rather than a factual or debating point.
Okay, we're going to have to conclude with this, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. And that is, I think that some of the problem on campus and some of the problem that you, Dr. Dubé, have faced from outside groups is that perhaps, even though it's factual, it's somewhat insensitive to criticize as racist and thereby to condemn a society which was built out of people, half of whom were exterminated less than a generation ago. And I think that's part of the problem that makes people, Jews that is, very upset.
Thanks for calling, sir.
Okay.
You have the last word.
Yeah, the problem then is simply just that, that in actual fact what you're saying is not entirely true, because there are people who know my cause and people who have been defending me, because they know that to be the truth. Now, to say that simply because a people has had a particular kind of an experience, therefore they have a right to do the very things which are responsible for the kind of experiences that they had, that it becomes right when they are doing them, I think it's wrong.
I don't want to run over by starting a whole new subject here, but that just brings up a very interesting point, and I can't resist it. What you just said more or less condemns the concept of affirmative action.
Not really.
Doesn't affirmative action say, because something has been done to this particular group, we have to make up for it a little bit? I'm not talking about equal opportunity.
Affirmative action is correcting what is still going on.
It's balancing the scale a little bit, you know, to make it even.
It's trying to make good of a situation that is bad. The situation of racism in the United States is not over. The discrimination against the minority group is not yet over. So that in trying to help the people who have been victims of that racism, to say that it is trying to balance up, I don't think that is correct.
Do you see any reverse racism at all?
No. Mm-hmm. There is nothing like reverse racism in affirmative action. Affirmative action is an attempt at creating or correcting what is wrong in the society.
But it's based on race. They ask, you know, if you apply for a job, they still ask you what your race is. Where there is no racism wouldn't do that.
That is the problem. That is the problem. We talk of race. What is race? It's a myth. But it's a myth which is perpetuated in certain countries, such as in the United States. Why can't it be dealt with as a people who have had a particular problem, who therefore that problem has to be corrected? But we always want to know what race you are and pretend that even race itself represents a reality, when it in fact represents a psychological outlook.
Well, we could certainly talk about this all afternoon, and we've already gone over, in fact. Professor Dubé, I want to thank you for coming out here and making for a most interesting program. And we hope to have you out here again real soon, and I'm sure you'll keep us updated as to just what happens next.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, and we'll be back again next week on Chatterbox, Monday afternoon at 2:30 p.m. You can tune in every weekday at 2:30 p.m. for other enlightening call-in programs here on WUSB Stony Brook. Till next time, so long.
Stardate, November 28th. If you like planet watching, plan on getting up early this week. More right after this.
Stardate is made possible through an underwriting grant by AP Computer Products, located at Computer Headquarters on Middle Country Road in Selden.
Stardate, November 28th. This fall, the pre-dawn sky has been graced by the planet Venus, the most brilliant object in the east right before sunrise. There are also two more planets visible above the eastern horizon before dawn, Mars and Saturn. Though Venus far outshines it, Mars can be found very easily Tuesday morning. Then Mars will be the bright reddish object very near the waning crescent moon on the dome of the sky. It should make a pretty sight in the morning, the lunar crescent just above reddish Mars. Lower down to the left, you'll see Venus, very bright, with a star nearby, the star Spica in the constellation Virgo. Compare the planets with Spica, and you might notice how much more the star appears to twinkle. The planets, on the other hand, shine with a steadier light. Wednesday morning, you can enjoy a slightly different arrangement. The planets and stars will be the same, but the crescent moon will have moved, as it always does, eastward in our sky to a position above Venus. There's a third planet also in the east before dawn. It's only just become visible in the morning twilight. Saturn will be much closer to the eastern horizon than the other two planets, beginning its long, slow climb out of the sun's glare. On Friday morning, Saturn too will receive a close visit from the moon. By then, the moon will appear as a tiny curved sliver of light, heading for a date on Sunday with a solar eclipse. Stardate is produced by the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. We're in Austin, Texas. Our zip code is 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
This is WUSB Stony Brook, the first station in the 90s.
Yeah! Don't let me startle you. I'm just doing the rebel yell here to kind of kick things off. You know what I mean?
Yellow rose in Texas, that I am gonna say. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her, pardon me. Oh, that's just a shade loud on the snare drum.
She's the sweetest little rosebud that Texas Avenue. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
See, now you've covered up sparkle like the dew. One of the loveliest parts in the whole
Texas is the only girl for me.
You covered up the piccolos there with the Rio Grande. Where the Rio? Where? What? See, my feeling is that while I love a good snare drum, I feel that volume-wise, it's just a little bit too much what you're doing there. See? See? See what I mean? Now you try and hold it down, will you? Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Where the Rio Grande? Appreciate it. Where the Rio Grande is flowing in starry sky, that's better. She walks along the river on the quiet. Oh, that's so much better. I know that she remembers when we parted long ago. You know that there's just a world of difference. Mercy.
She's the sweetest little rosebud that Texas Avenue. Her eyes are bright as diamonds. They sparkle like you.
See, now you're slipping back in your old habits again. Why do you do that? Why do you?
Texas is the only girl for me.
I love a good snare drum, but you know. People, let's go back there. The snare drama covered up the tra-la-las. We just do it again. Smart Aleck. You see how lovely that turned out? Now that's a darling part. Okay, banjo. Yuck-dugga-dugga-dugga. That's pretty, that's pretty. Oh, now I'm going to that's pretty. For my heart is full of woe. We'll do the things together we did so long ago. We'll play the banjo gaily. She'll love me like me. Excuse me, you ain't any kin to the snare drummer, are you?
She's the sweetest little rosebud that Texas has.
Why do you do that? Why do you burst out like that? Irritates me. That irritates me. That irritates me, that's all. But the yellow rose of Texas. Hold on! Smart aleck Yankee drummer, you can cover up yelling, you can cover up rose, buddy, but don't you cover up Texas, or I'll stick your head through that cotton picking.